The content shared on Your Life, Your Wealth Network reflects the views of the host and guests of the program only and are not necessarily the views of Cordasco Financial Network or its advisors. This media production is educational in nature and should not be construed as financial, legal, or tax advice or a solicitation or presentation of sale of any financial products or services. Please consult a professional prior to making any financial, tax, or legal decisions. Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network, helping you find clarity and comfort for your life and wealth. Now, here's your host, financial advisor, and CEO of Cordasco Financial Network, Steve Cordasco.
Welcome back to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cordasco. I'm so happy that you're able to join us today. On today's show, we're doing a best of your life and your wealth for this special Memorial Day weekend. We've selected the most popular segments for our show to bring to you today. First, we'll have Larry Kudlow, CNBC senior commentator and host of the Kudlow Report. He'll be talking about his new book, JFK and the Reagan Revolution. Kudlow's analysis will bring light to Trump's economic policies, his tax proposal. Next, we'll have the guru of life transitions on the show, Dr. Nancy Schlossberg. She'll be here to give us an inside look at how to handle the biggest transition of all, retirement. And she will share insights and tips that you can use to embrace this fantastic stage of your life to truly enjoy your golden years. I will also talk about what $1 million means today. What's it worth? There's a growing trend of millionaires popping up across the country, but does that mean you're rich? Tune in. Lots to cover on today's show during this wonderful Memorial Day weekend. And now, Larry Kudlow.
So, Larry, a bird flies in my window, mentions that you and maybe it was Steve Moore. I don't know if it was Laffer, but I know it was you. And Donald Trump was reaching out to talk to you about policy, tax policy, lower taxes, the economy, and was talking to you to get ideas of how to get this economy where he wants it to be and the place it's best for all Americans. And rumor has it, he said, hey, need you in my camp, want you to be my advisor, want to, you know, announce it. And you guys kind of looked at him and said, we can't. We're free trade folks, and your policy on free trade is different. And supposedly his feedback was, well, we don't have to agree on everything, which if that's true, if the bird's correct that flew in my window, sounds like we got a president that's willing to be accommodative and not just one-sided. Tell me if I'm on par with what I'm hearing, and give me your take if that actually did happen.
I think your bird probably hit the window first.
Darn, it just killed all my credibility, Larry.
Yeah, I know. It's just, you know, I get the little birdie idea, but not all of them make it. There are parts of your story that are true. Look, first of all, Steve Moore and I were informal advisors to the campaign, asked by now President Trump to help out on economics, but particularly his large-scale tax reform plan, which I think is terrific and would grow the economy, you know, perhaps by as much as 4% over a bunch of years. Art Laffer was less directly, but Art was a help, and Art is my mentor, and Art is Steve's mentor. So, yes, he was involved sometimes directly, sometimes indirectly. So, all you know, that part is true, and I am still a big supporter of Mr. Trump's tax reform plan, which hasn't changed much from what we put together last summer and fall. So that part's absolutely true.
So let's take a look at here we are, out of the gate. We're a few weeks into the Trump administration. And taking from your book, JFK and the Reagan Revolution, Trump has been issuing orders at a rapid pace. How does this compare with JFK and Reagan during their administration?
Well, look, we didn't write so much about Kennedy on that point. Reagan, I was there as an OMB deputy, and Reagan moved very quickly to rewrite regulations. But by the way, I believe the afternoon he was inaugurated, he decontrolled the price of oil, which then started to fall for the next 5 or 6 years, contrary to what all the so-called experts said. But the main point of our book is a narrative that's never been told, and that is we all know that Ronald Reagan was a great supply-side tax cutter, that he believed lower marginal tax rates allowed you to keep more of what you earned. You would reward success, and that would create an incentive to grow. You'd, you know, more hours worked, more investment, more risk-taking. And I believe strongly that worked. In fact, I think Reagan launched a 20-year boom. But what folks don't really know is that the first supply-side tax cutter was not Ronald Reagan. It was John F. Kennedy. Mm-hmm. And the Kennedy tax cuts, which have almost been lost to history, the Democrats have basically read his legacy out of the party's history. Well, Kennedy was the hero. Because after 8 years of Eisenhower's stagnation with three recessions, Kennedy knew he had to grow the economy at 5% a year. He tried the usual formula of government spending from his Ivy League experts. That didn't work. And in comes the key player, a guy named Douglas Dillon, a famous New York banker who was an Eisenhower Republican, Undersecretary of State, Ambassador of France. And Dillon said, look, we have to create free enterprise. We have to create animal spirits. So, Mr. President, let's lower marginal tax rates across the board. No more government spending. And 20 years later, the key point here is that Reagan and Jack Kemp, you know, they were looking for a solution to high inflation and high unemployment. And the solution they chose was JFK's. A, lower tax rates, and B, and this is very important, keep the dollar steady and sound. I call it tax cuts and king dollar. It worked in the 60s, it worked in the 80s and 90s, and it will work again if they would try it. And Mr. Trump is very much a part of that tradition, although there are some issues about the dollar and so forth. But nonetheless, on tax reform, I think he's solid.
Great. And you map it out wonderfully. Let's go to JFK. And I want to parallel right now to Trump, because Trump looks very radical in what he's doing. And it sounds as if this approach that JFK took was radical. I'm sure it was radical to his party. I wasn't there. I didn't know the mood of the country. But if you can shed some color on whether it was accepted, whether people thought, you know, he was doing something that was catastrophic, was it this much? Was it as venomous as what we're seeing right now with Trump?
Well, not venomous. But look, nobody had cut taxes in 40 some odd years. When Kennedy became president, contrary to the urban legend, the Eisenhower years were not years of prosperity. Ike suffered three recessions, and the average growth rate was, I don't know, 2%. And Kennedy wanted 5%. He campaigned on 5% growth. So when he and Doug Dillon mapped out this new approach, and yeah, I would say it was fairly radical in the post-war period, of lowering marginal tax rates instead of just using government spending, he had a lot of opposition. Republicans didn't like it because all that, you know, they kept saying, we'll cut taxes, sure, but we have to cut spending first. Well, Republicans never cut spending. Democrats, a lot of them didn't like it. The Southern Democrats, the Dixie Democrats. So Kennedy had a big selling operation. Did a very good job, by the way. And it's kind of similar later with Reagan. Remember, Reagan's tax cuts were ridiculed. But the fact is, he stuck to it. Reagan was down 15 percentage points in September 1980, where he delivers a speech reemphasizing his plan to lower marginal tax rates and keep the dollar strong. And he stuck with it. He stuck with it. And he gave JFK credit. That's the key. He said this was tried by none other than John F. Kennedy, and it worked. This is a direct quote. So Kennedy had a selling job, Reagan had a selling job, and they both did it. Reagan got 75 House votes, Democratic. Reagan got 75 Democratic House votes in the spring and summer of 1981. And Kennedy won in the House back in 63 before he was tragically assassinated. It was still hung up in the Senate, but LBJ got that through after Kennedy's assassination. So there's another lesson here, by the way. Not only economic growth matters, not only do supply-side incentives matter, but civility and bipartisanship also matter when you're trying to make a sale. I personally would love to see a bipartisan tax reform bill this year. I'd love to see it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Larry Kudlow is my guest, and a fantastic read, a book that I just absolutely love and sent to many of you. Highly recommend you pick it up. It's JFK and the Reagan Revolution, A Secret History of American Prosperity. Let's talk about the dollar, the Federal Reserve. Reagan embraced Volcker's policy, right? Now, Volcker was there when Reagan got in, and Reagan stuck with him. And there was a lot of fallout in where Volcker said, you know what, I'm going to just drive up interest rates, we'll break this thing. And Reagan went along with it, knowing there would be fallout. He had confidence in his Fed chairman. I don't know if Trump has that same confidence, nor do I believe that I'm 100% that this Fed chairman isn't politically driven. And I wonder where all that goes. Can you give some input on where you think we end up from a Federal Reserve standpoint
with Trump? You know, one thing's very important to know. The Treasury Department actually has the play on the dollar. Mm-hmm. Now, Doug Dillon was a strong dollar man for Kennedy, and Donald Regan was a strong dollar man at Treasury for Reagan. Now, of course, Treasury and Fed work together, so that's very important. My guess is, at this point, Janet Yellen's going to play it straight. If the tax cuts go through, the economy will pick up, thankfully, and the Fed will gradually be raising interest rates. They'll follow market rates up. Real interest rates going to go up, and the Fed will follow market rates up, and that's exactly what she should do. I do not believe Trump will reappoint her. You know, it's a year away. But the story is not really about Yellen right now. The story is about new President Trump getting his pro-growth tax reforms through, and he's got a Republican Congress, and they basically agree with him. So I think that I think Mr. Trump has been too ambiguous about the dollar. I don't want to see him hint at a weaker dollar. You're not going to devalue your way into prosperity. It's not going to happen. I don't care whether you're Argentina or Brazil or anybody, Japan. You're not going to do it. You need a strong dollar for confidence. So if you lower tax rates for businesses, large and small, and you have a steady dollar, guess what? America will be the greatest investment destination in the world, which will add to the growth. So I think that's the way this is going to play out. And as I say, it's very early in the game, so there's some key points that we're not absolutely sure about, except for the fact that the president does want lower tax rates.
Real quick, because I know you have to run. President Trump was very pointed the other evening when announcing his Supreme Court nominee, that he keeps his word. He's a man of his word. And that was a strong message that I'm not a politician that's, you know, going to not do what I said I was going to do. So where does that leave us with free trade? What is your best guess of how he can keep his promise to those constituents who voted for him and also bring manufacturing and jobs and fair trade back to our country?
Just grow the economy.
That's it.
Growth is the most powerful force. And when we're growing, a lot of wonderful things happen. Wages, living standards, good jobs, etc., etc. And if we adopt these tax reforms, you'll see them spread around the world. That's what happened with Reagan. So I think that's the key. Economic growth is absolutely the number one key.
Gotcha.
By the way, Gorsuch, an inspired choice. I knew his mother. She ran Reagan's EPA. And inspired choice.
Hey, Larry Kudlow, thank you so much. Love the work you do over at CNBC. And it's a fantastic book. Ladies and gentlemen, highly recommend you go out, pick it up, give it a read. JFK and the Reagan Revolution, A Secret History of American Prosperity. Larry,
thank
we're
you.
Working hard to get you here to Philly. Looking forward to seeing you soon. Thanks
looking
so much.
Looking forward to it. Can't thank you enough. Bye-bye.
Take care. It's the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cardasco on 990 WNTP. You can also like us on Facebook, facebook.com/CFNplan. Twitter, follow me at CFNplan, and shoot me your emails, info@CFNplan.
Hi, Hugh Hewitt here. Do you have a sound retirement strategy? Have you taken the time to sit down and write a plan for achieving your retirement dreams? Sadly, most of us spend more time planning our vacations than our own financial future. I'm here to tell the Delaware Valley a name that most people probably already know, Steve Cardasco. You've been listening to Steve for the last 25 years. You've been reading his articles in the Philadelphia Business Journal, Forbes, TheStreet.com. Steve Cardasco and his team have just come out with a new guide for retirement planning called Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy right now at cfnplan.com. That's cfnplan.com. The guide is packed with helpful tips like how to make a retirement plan work for you, generating cash flow in retirement, tax saving strategies, ways to reduce stock market stress, investment solutions that match your risk, how to bring comfort and clarity to your retirement, much, much more. And now for my Hugh Hewitt listeners, I strongly recommend you get a copy of Steve Cardasco's guide, Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy now at cfnplan.com. That's CFN, N as in network, plan.com. Go now to cfnplan.com.
As I promised, joining me now is Nancy Schlossberg. And Nancy has spent most of her career as a professor of counseling psychology at multiple universities. She's written some fabulous books. I'll give you a couple of them because she's written many. Revitalizing Retirement and her latest book, Too Young to Be Old. We're going to talk about the transition of life. I say retirement only because that's what it's been branded. I struggle with that label. Maybe Nancy will help me clarify. Nancy, welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network.
I'm so glad to be here, Steve.
Do you see me struggle with retirement? Because I've been now almost 30 years helping people go through that transition of leaving a career to do something different. And I don't want to say retirement, but can we come up with a better label?
You know, when I was writing the book, Revitalizing Retirement, I tried to come up with a better label. I really did. And I couldn't come up with anything because, of course, it's a transition, but so is having your first baby a transition. So the only way to it needs a word to distinguish it from other transitions.
All right. So why don't you and I spend some time over the next few months? You know, when
okay.
you're back in D.C., we'll get together. I'll buy you a martini or whatever your drink of choice is, or a dinner, and we'll brainstorm to try to find a word that works. How's that?
I would love it. In my first book, Retire Smart, Retire Happy, the Spanish, came up with a word that is celebration. But I honestly don't remember the name. But nobody was going to. I put it in the book, but it didn't have any traction.
We'll figure it out because okay. celebration is good. But you know, people tend not to go in thinking it's a celebration, right? Change is fearful and scary, and it's the unknown. So
right.
what inspired you to study retirement, since that's the word we're going to use right now?
Okay. Up until the time I retired, I had been studying one transition after another and developed a framework for looking at any transition. I wasn't even thinking about retirement. After all, I was too young for that. Well, then I retired. And then I moved very soon after I retired. We moved down to Florida, to Sarasota, where we used to vacation. And I figured that everybody would be wanting me to work for them, do something, but those things weren't happening. So I began to think, I don't know a thing about retirement, so I'm going to study it. And I started with focus groups, and I studied all kinds of people who lived in trailer parks, people who CEO of a Fortune 100 company. I tried to get a range of people, and that ended up in a book, Retire Smart, Retire Happy, which then became the centerpiece of a PBS pledge special called Retire Smart, Retire Happy. So I was prompted, because I didn't understand why I was having so many problems with retirement, and I had not expected, I had not planned for the fact that this is a major set of transitions. Mm-hmm. So then I found that in retirement, I had identified six paths that people go through in retirement, and I was following one of the paths. I was a continuer, and a continuer is someone who continues in the same general area, mm-hmm. but in a modified form. So although I was not teaching, and I was not a faculty member, and I was not a professor, I was writing about transitions. And since retirement, I have written 3.5 books. So I ended up spending my retirement writing in my field.
And educating, right? So you're a born-bred educator, and so now, you know, you're coming up with the data, which is fabulous, because me as an advisor tries to spend a lot of time in that emotional space, not so much the number space. And what many advisors right. do that are trying to, they say that, you know, they're a retirement specialist, they help people transition, it's all about a number. You might remember the book, What's Your Number?
Yeah, is that you?
No, it's not me, because I wouldn't have wrote that book. It's not about a number. It's about the emotions and living the best life in retirement. And that should not mean a number, in my opinion, right? So in this, the transition process has a lot of people go through a lot of different types of emotions, right? And that's
right.
what retirement really is. It's this, I say, going from a career, right, ending a career, to go doing other things. It's other things you want to do, freedom. So
you're changing your role. You're changing your relationships with people, your close colleagues you don't see regularly anymore. So you're changing your roles, your relationships, your daily routines. Your life was structured a different way when you worked, and you're changing your assumptions about yourself and the world.
That's right. And it's, and you said two key things there, right? There's structure. People in the when you look at people and they get job satisfaction, they may not like, you know, certain things. They get tired
right.
of going into the city, or, you know, the university has
yeah.
changed and now we have to follow this code. But the structure is what at least gives a lot of people who have certain type of DNA a comfort zone, right? So it's about being comfortable and going
right.
into this
well,
place.
I'll tell you something else that shocked me. I had an interview with a CEO of a Fortune 100 company. His pension was almost $1 million, his pension. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a lot of money for a pension. So he's a very rich man. And here's what he said in the interview. We're sitting at a table, and he said, retirement is hollow. I said, what do you mean? He said, he knocked on the table. He said, that's solid. Retirement is hollow. I had no idea of what was in store for me. I thought that I would still have the power I had, the influence I had, all of the things that I had with, but as a retiree, and it didn't happen. And I had no expectation. I had not even thought about the psychological aspect of retirement.
So, what advice can you give those about?
Okay.
About retirement, meaning someone like myself who's an advisor and maybe someone who is partnering with me and entrusting someone like me with their money to help get them through this next part of life.
Well, one of the things I found as I was writing the second retirement book, Revitalizing Retirement, and that book describes in detail the various paths people take. There are two things that are important, I think. I found, you know, you the financial advisors talk about your financial portfolio, mm-hmm. and I talk about your psychological portfolio, mm-hmm. and the three parts of the psychological portfolio: your identity, your purpose, and your relationships. And what you need to be thinking about as you retire, either before retirement, during, after, you need to be thinking about who you are, because you've been pretty clear who you are before. If you're a bricklayer, if you're a roofer, if you're an executive, you kind of know who you are. You have a tag. All I would have to say is, you know, I'm a professor at the University of Maryland. But once you leave Maryland, or you leave the roofing company you've been working with, once you leave that, how do you identify yourself? So that's really key. Related to that is purpose, and this is central. You've had a purpose before, whether you liked what you were doing or you didn't like it. There was a reason you were getting up every day in the morning and going to work, and there was a purpose. Now, what's your purpose? One woman said to me, you know, I used to be hired by companies to help them develop their mission statement. I'm retired. I need somebody to help me with a mission statement.
Wow.
And that's really important. I talked to a retired Secretary of Labor, and he said when I told him the three things in the portfolio, identity, relationships, purpose, he said, purpose is it. I don't have a purpose. I don't have a passion. That is central, and that is so tied to your identity. And the third thing, of course, is your relationships, mm-hmm. both with work colleagues and with family. Everything changes. So here, your whole life is in flux. You've had a life with a role, relationships, mm-hmm. Routines, assumptions. Now that's all mixed up as you are struggling to find a new purpose, new identity, and develop, maintain the old, but develop a new set of relationships. That can take a long time. Eventually, you will develop a new role, set of relationships, routines, and assumptions, but it's that middle period while you're struggling with it. That's what gives people angst.
Nancy Schlossberg, you're the best. Really appreciate your passion to help those as they transition life into those retired years. I'll leave you this quick story. I have five kids, right? My kids go from 18, one going off to college, all the way down to age 8.
My gosh.
And I got to tell you, it's you who have studied psychology. For me, trying to shift gears from an 18-year-old to twin 15-year-olds to a 13-year-old to an 8-year-old, right?
So, oh, my God.
So you know when an 8-year-old walks into a room, that 8-year-old sees the room much different than an 18-year-old sees it, much different than me at 51 sees it, right?
Right,
and so these,
right.
The beauty of the 8-year-old, I always thought, geez, am I ever going to get out of this thing why I still walk, right? So I mean, I'll be walking her down the aisle probably with a walker if you do the math, right?
Okay.
So I'm just give you a real quickie, right? So I have taken time to say, you know what? Now I'm 51. I am just going to take all these little things that my 8-year-old says and just be in the moment with it. So the other day she says to me, Daddy, you know, what do you do when you go into work? And because I don't see her so much right now. I'm in a transition phase of life. So I said, well, you know, I do. This is what I do. And she says, well, I said, and I help people with retirement. Because she asked me if I help people. And she goes, oh, I know what retirement is. She goes, that's what Poppy does. Right. This is my dad now. She calls him Poppy, who is retired, who lives at the shore, Atlantic City. And what she visions retirement being is what my dad does. And I said, well, what is retirement? What do you mean? What does Poppy do? Right? Because I know my dad doesn't have a job. He doesn't. He's fully retired. He's waiting for the newspaper to come. He's still a newspaper reader. She says he sits on the bench on the boardwalk. That's retirement.
Isn't that interesting? May I just add one thing? I have an article in the May issue of Money Magazine on retirement that really kind of condenses that was based on a chapter in my new book, Too Young to Be Old, on retirement.
Right.
So your readers might want to take a look at Money Magazine.
All right. I'll tell you what, we'll dig that up. We'll put it on our Facebook page. And I really, really appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us. And
thank you. Thank you. I enjoyed it.
And we'll have to get together soon because you have all kinds of good stuff and you're doing good work. And there's not enough people doing this type of work because a lot of people, baby boomers, more than ever before, are venturing into this new part of life. And again, the whole goal is not what's your number or how much money you have.
Right.
It's whether or not you're living your best life. So appreciate it, Nancy. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Ladies and gentlemen,
bye-bye.
You're listening to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. We're also broadcasting live on 990 WNTP. You can Facebook me, facebook.com/CFNplan. You can like us there. Also, if you want to send me an email, info@CFNplan.com. I'm Steve Cordasco. Back in a moment.
Hey, Rich Dilley here. My friend Steve Cordasco, financial advisor and founder of Cordasco Financial Network, is back with a new retirement guide called Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. This guide is packed with helpful tips like how to make a retirement plan work for you, how to successfully generate cash flow in retirement, and how to utilize great tax savings strategies. This guide also uncovers the best practices to reduce stock market stress, how to find investment solutions that match your risk tolerance, and how to bring comfort and clarity to your retirement. Whether you are taking the first steps to retirement planning and don't know where to start, are in pre-retirement and looking to accumulate wealth, or already retired and looking to preserve your wealth, you should get a copy of Steve Cordasco's guide, Your Plan to a Successful Retirement, and it's totally free. Get your copy right now at cfnplan.com. That's CFN, N as in network, plan.com. Go right now to cfnplan.com.
Hey, it's the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cordasco. I'm going to get into kind of the stats behind $1 million and what $1 million means today and the number of people who have $1 million today and talk about what that means over time. It's funny because when this article came to me, right, when the article came to me, I thought right away, whenever I think of $1 million, I thought about the first time I ever really connected with the word million. And it happened in the 1970s when there was a TV show on that I used to watch called The Bionic Man. And you guys remember the story. It was $6 million to rebuild him. Steve Austin, he was an astronaut and, you know, went through a bad time and they had to rebuild him. And it was $6 million. Well, to do that today, that $6 million that it cost in 1974 to create the Bionic Man is $34 million today. I don't know what a show would do for my kids where it was the $34 million man. Would it resonate to them? They watch Transformers, which I guess is similar to that, but nobody puts a dollar value on a Transformer other than when I go in the store to buy one. So let's dig into this. The climbing stock market, many believe, has helped create millionaires. Same with rising real estate. Today, we have 500,000 new millionaires in the United States, according to a new report that came out. And they kept this data up until 2014. There's always a lag time on the data. So we have 500,000 new millionaires in our country. There are 10.1 million households that have $1 million. Of investable assets. That's excluding the value in the primary residence. So if you're walking around saying you're one of them, and therefore you're one of the 10.1, this is liquid dollar. This is money you have that you can go out and invest. This isn't the money that's built into your house. If you want to fall into this statistic, sell your house, and you're there if you have $1 million worth of built-in equity in the house. So I need to kind of couch that. Okay, that's up from past, and that's an all-time record high. The number of households, I find this interesting, with 5 million or more, it hit a new record as well. There's 1.3 million households with $5 million of liquid assets. That doesn't sound like a lot of households to me. Maybe it does to you. And when you get to $25 million of actual cash on hand to invest, it's 142,000 households. So the story is the rich get richer. But it also needs to be noted that people are becoming wealthier. Wealth can be created in this country. We've been taught that that's not the case, and I don't think it's fair. Why? Because the political environment paints a picture that's different than reality. The average number of millionaires, the average age of a millionaire today is 62 years of age. That's not shocking to me. Vince, my producer, found that shocking. I guess because we hear of so many wealthy tech folks who are younger, right? Elon Musk comes to mind. You know, the Google guys. Steve Jobs was a young guy. But what's important to note is most of the millionaires today have created their own wealth, not because they went out and was able to create a disruptive piece of technology. They did it through hard work. How do we know this? Because out of this same study came the most logical piece of information to me. But the fact that it's actually in print gives me another one of those wow moments. Are you ready for this? 70% of millionaires work 40 hours a week. So when people come to me and say, you know, how do you make it? I had a conversation with somebody on the phone today who was going for a job interview. And at the end of the day, I said, listen, don't be afraid to tell them you work hard. You raised 8 kids. You got up early. You stayed until the job had to get done. You're a hard worker. So it doesn't surprise me that millionaires today work 40 plus hours a week. When people ask me, when I go to do a talk, what's key to just work? I can't tell you I'm smarter than the next guy. So 70% of those that are that 1% that you hear out there, the 1%ers, are workers. So ultimately, I got to tell you, they didn't get lucky, as a former president liked to let everybody to believe. He can view it as luck, but guess what? Like I tell my kids, if you work hard and you get a break, is that luck or because you were working hard? We can debate it like the chicken or the egg, and every one of those phenomenons in life that we have to get philosophical about. More than 80% of those worth $25 million or more give at least $10,000 to charity. I find that, I think that's a small number, but I don't know enough about the stat because I do know people with $25 million, and I would tell you majority of them are very, very philanthropic to the point where they might not give it today, but it's earmarked to go. So I'm not sure that stat's fair. 21% give more than 21% give more than $100,000 to charity. So they're a generous group as a whole. Where am I going with this? What's it mean to you? What's it mean to your life and your wealth? I talk a lot about this commercial that's out because there's always good, you know, there's always financial service company commercials. And some of them grind me wrong. And I always thought, geez, am I jaded because I'm part of an industry, Wall Street, that advertises themselves and promotes themselves in a way to the public that is very different than what's inside, because I've worked inside. And for the most part, the commercials don't really match what's inside. But one recently did connect with me. It happens to be a TD Ameritrade commercial where there's a couple young folks. I don't know. They're probably Gen Xers. They're sitting there on a couch, and they have a financial advisor who sort of looks like he could be a tech guy sitting there, and he's listening, and they're having a conversation, and the couple say, you know, we have $100,000. It's not a fortune, but is it enough for you to help us? And he says something powerful. He said, how long did it take you to save $100,000? And they said, a lifetime. And he says, it is a fortune. So the point is, it's the perception more than anything. And when I say the perception, that's important because most millionaires, and I know a lot. Look, if you read up on my company, Cardasco Financial Network, we put in writing what we do. That's why we're a fiduciary. We're a fee-based company. That's why people know what they're getting into when they engage with me, because it's upfront and it's transparent. And there's a very clear number. You got to be one of these people to be able to work with us. That kept me up at night, and I created another company, Wisdom Planning, that can help people who don't have that kind of money. But for the most part, when you come to this company, that's what you need. Why? Because what it takes to work with that kind of money is expensive, and we have to cover that cost. So we need that. We need those types of dollars. But it allows me to understand how that money was made. And most people who make that money don't have a goal to say, I want to make $1 million. That was never, for 99.9% of them, that was never the original goal. 25% of the people who make it into this space we're talking about, millionaires, are business owners. I can tell you how they started out. First, they wanted to have the company succeed past 5 years, where most businesses fail. They wanted to be able to cover debt. They want to take care of their family, educate their kids, take care of their employees. They go to bed worried most nights. They have to keep up with change. And then one day, in life, they look up and they're worth $1 million. Doesn't surprise me the average age is 62, because that's usually the period of time when people start to sell their businesses. So there's a different mindset. Baby boomers today view $1 million like it's nothing. Why? Well, think about it. If you're heading into retirement, you're 65 years old, what does $1 million generate in cash flow? That's what they're looking at it as. How is this going to provide for me? At 4% interest, that's $40,000 a year. Some would say, how do you live on $40,000 a year? And if you're 65, 20 years from now, you're 85. 85-year-olds are pretty damn healthy. So let's go back to the bionic man at $6 million. He's $34 million today. Double that period of time, $40,000 isn't going to be worth a heck of a lot when you're 78. I know a guy at 78 who's doing push-ups. I want to be that guy too. And you all do too. We're living in the greatest time ever. So for baby boomers, we're taking care of ourselves, doing what we can do right at this stage of life now to keep it going. We want to see more grandkids and great-grandkids and experience life. It's very different than millennials. $1 million to millennials seems like a lot of money. Why? Think about the car. They're thinking what kind of car they can buy. The house. A 26-year-old with $1 million sees it in a whole different way. Bottom line is, when you're setting goals, don't set it based on a number. There was a best-selling book called What's Your Number? And it was produced for those in the financial service industry and statisticians to say, what's your number? You need to know your number because that's the number you get to when you want to retire. As soon as you have that number, then you know you can go. No, that's wrong. It's more about your life than your wealth. Most business owners decide to retire not because they have the money, because it's time for them in their life. And that's when all of a sudden many of them realize they're a millionaire. But they're not buying a house and they're not buying the car. They're going the opposite direction with that stuff. So what does this mean to you? What does it mean to your life and your wealth? It's good to know that there's a mindset around goal setting. And there's a right way to goal set. When it comes to a number, I never think it's healthy to goal set that way. Nor when you're working with someone. What tends to happen when somebody's at that age of 62, they're not accustomed to that kind of wealth in their hands. And building a team around that is important. Why? Because the emotional connection to that money is powerful. There's fears that come with it. Shedding a business and now having this money puts you into a space that you don't know anything about, which is scary. What's even more scary? You can think back to the bionic man at $6 million that would cost $34 million today. We're at a stage of life as baby boomers to know that that money is not as powerful as it can be. That you need to deal with what comes with it, which is a lot of anxieties and fears. Working with family members, what kind of life do you want to live? It was all built on a certain lifestyle. And usually retirement brings you to a different lifestyle, of which then you recognize what you have. A team who understands that by your side can help you avoid mistakes, because mistakes can be made, just like a millennial getting $1 million who might hit that lottery. Buying the fancy car, getting a zip code, or I know someone who decided to take a few years off of work because $1 million sounded like enough to last a lifetime. Hey, it's the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cordasco. Don't forget, you can follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/CFNplan, or reach me at info@cfnplan.com. We'll back in a moment.
Hi, Hugh Hewitt here. Do you have a sound retirement strategy? Have you taken the time to sit down and write a plan for achieving your retirement dream? Sadly, most of us spend more time planning our vacations than our own financial future. I'm here to tell the Delaware Valley a name that most people probably already know. Steve Cordasco. You've been listening to Steve for the last 25 years. You've been reading his articles in the Philadelphia Business Journal, Forbes, TheStreet.com. Steve Cordasco and his team have just come out with a new guide for retirement planning called Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy right now at cfnplan.com. That's cfnplan.com. The guide is packed with helpful tips like how to make a retirement plan work for you, generating cash flow in retirement, tax saving strategies, ways to reduce stock market stress, investment solutions that match your risk, how to bring comfort and clarity to your retirement, much, much more. And now for my Hugh Hewitt listeners, I strongly recommend you get a copy of Steve Cordasco's guide, Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy now at cfnplan.com. That's CFN, N as in network, plan.com. Go now to cfnplan.com.
And welcome back to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cordasco. So happy you're a part of our program today on this beautiful Memorial Day weekend. I want to introduce everybody to my marketing associate and the producer of the Your Life, Your Wealth Network, Leah Mealy. Leah, welcome to the show.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
First time on, right?
It is.
You're doing a fabulous job producing each week.
Thank you.
For the Your Life, Your Wealth Network, also here on 990 WNTP. I need your help. The big news out this past week, just at the end of the week, was that will Snapchat be able to exist? Mm-hmm. Will it be able to continue moving on, and will it gain popularity like Facebook? And they're comparing Facebook to Snapchat and just saying Snapchat just can't get there. What's your take on that? Do you think Snapchat has reached its full potential, or are you like me where I think it could be bigger than Facebook?
I mean, it's great to get videos, but that's kind of the maximum that Snapchat can do, right? You can't really post things. You can't. It's just videos.
So do you think it's something that hasn't caught on to other demographics? Could be it, meaning baby boomers? Are your mom and dad on Snapchat?
No, they're not on.
Why?
Snapchat. I just think it's been targeted for the younger generation.
Like Facebook started. Yeah. I find my mom and dad are now on Snapchat more than me. I mean, they're on Snapchat more than Facebook.
Yeah.
Because I turned them on to Snapchat. Mm-hmm. And so it's neat. For example, I found myself in talking to social media about clients. So our clients tend to be baby boomers, right? They're folks that are north of 50. They're not millennials for the most part. And many of them aren't even Gen Xers, right? They're the next bracket. They're the younger end of baby boomers and middle towards baby boomers. And when it comes to talking about communication and different types of communication ways that are out there, I find that I'm recommending more and more to my clients to be on Snapchat, not to communicate with me, but the beauty of Snapchat is that they get to share what's happening with their grandkids, their kids. Like, my mom and dad see more of our family than they ever have because of Snapchat. Now, they're close enough to show up when they need to show up, but they just don't get over as much. And to me, the debate out there is, will it continue or will it die? Will it be over? And what they mean by that is somebody will come in and buy them to maybe put them out of existence or do something like Facebook did with Instagram, because I think Facebook bought Instagram, correct? They did, yeah. So I think it's all under one. But yet Instagram lost its momentum at some point. And it was either Snapchat that knocked them off or the fact that they were bought and muddled a bit to help Facebook. So that's why I have you. I wanted to get your take on it because, to me, I'm going to keep talking about Snapchat because I think there's a future for it. What are you doing this weekend? Anything good? Memorial Day weekend?
Ocean City.
Hitting the beach?
Yep.
Good.
Yep.
Friends, family?
Friends.
Good. You'll be Snapchatting?
I will be.
Good. And I'll be able to see it, or are you going to block me? So, ladies and gentlemen, do this. If you have grandchildren, children, ask them, are you on Snapchat? If they are, ask them to friend you on Snapchat. Come on, be bold, take a chance. this Memorial Day weekend as we all share good times together and have fun. So I'll be snapping. Leah will be snapping if she doesn't block me. And I know my mom and dad will be doing it too. So that'll be a little homework assignment for you. Feel free, email me. Let me know what your take is. Give me the feedback that you have with regards to talking Snapchat to your family members, your grandkids, kids, and loved ones. See who's on it and see if they're willing to friend you. And then share with me the experience you have. Yes, Snapchat is the one where things disappear. And that doesn't mean it's all bad stuff on there. There's a lot of good stuff. I don't see very much bad stuff on there. So I only got on there because my kids were on there and I wanted to see what they were doing because I heard all these things about it. Now I'm addicted to it. So, hey, I'm Steve Cordasco. Leah, thanks for being here. And thanks for all you do. You can say thank you.
Thank you.
Email me, info@cfmplan.com. You can also find me on Facebook, facebook.com/cfmplan. Have a great weekend this Memorial Day weekend. You're listening to the 990 WNTP and the Your Life, Your Wealth Network.
Thanks for joining us on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. All of our shows are reproduced as podcasts and can be listened to on demand at your convenience. If you're interested in learning more about applying the principles we discuss to your personal financial circumstances, please visit Cordasco Financial Network at cfnplan.com or call our office at 215-558-3500. We hope you'll join us again next time on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network.